This is head coach of the LA Lakers, Luke Walton. You're listening to The Popcorn Machine on Lakers.com.
Everybody, welcome back to The Popcorn Machine on Lakers.com. Joey Ramirez here at UCLA Health Training Center with Mike Trudell. Mike, a very, very interesting 24 hours. Really an interesting 3 weeks for the Lakers, but especially with the trade deadline, 24 hours. How are you holding up?
I'm doing great. You were in the building last night at Staples Center, and there was this palpable kind of energy and just I don't know if a feeling is too primitive of a word, but just there was something going on. I think whether it was with the teams playing the court, and sure, 12 of 16 wins, 4 in a row, 8 in a row at home, that all helps. But I think Lakers fans are smart. They certainly recognize that this was quite a strong move for Rob Pelinka and Magic Johnson. For all of the reasons that we're going to get into here, Joey, and that we broke down in a couple of pieces on Lakers.com over the last couple of days, and you guys can go to the homepage and check that out if you missed it. And I just think that it's such a clear path now to see where, not just where the Lakers want to go, but how it's easier to get there, right? And I think that all of that kind of combined together with the players and the energy in the court has just been building over these last that time period that you mentioned, really since the 9-game losing streak stopped on, the Hawks win was on Sunday the 7th, right? And, you know, since then, again, they have lost 4 times, they have won 12 times, and 8 out of the last 10. So it's been a very encouraging stretch of games, no question.
Yeah. I'm going to pay you 2 compliments real quick, Mike. First of all, I think what you just said makes a lot of sense. It's not just here's what the Lakers are doing. It's here's a concrete example of how they're going to get there. We've heard the plan of 2 max free agents in the past, pretty much for the past 4 or 5 years. This right here is a concrete example of how the front office is making moves to open up that possibility. Mm-hmm. And then B, you broke it down very simply, like you said in our Lakers.com piece. In your piece, one of the first graphs that you wrote was basically this did 3 things. It opened up salary cap, it earned a first-round draft pick, and it brought in some shooting for this year's roster. And I think that's a win-win-win when you look at this move. And, of course, you have to offload talent. Jordan Clarkson and Larry Nance Jr. are both really good young players, but you get 3 things back that you really want.
Yeah, and so that really came from, you know, that article came from, it's Magic and Pelinka's move towards the future. It came straight from Rob Pelinka's mouth. You know, and here, let me read the actual quote. "This trade hit on all fronts," said Rob Pelinka. "If you look at the pathway to the great, great teams and success in the NBA, most of the time it's through a road where a team has great flexibility and draft assets to seize opportunities to get the elite players in the game. I think we, probably more than any organization in the NBA right now, have the healthiest salary structure, the healthiest flexibility." And yeah, those 3 things are, of course, replacing the first-round pick that went out in the Nash trade back in the day that, amazingly, the Lakers somehow avoided paying early by not getting out of the lottery in all those consecutive years. And that, by the way, gave you Brandon Ingram and Lonzo Ball by avoiding that fate earlier. And then, of course, the bringing in shooting for this season without taking on any additional salary past that season. And then the most notable, perhaps, and it depends, but the cap space. And here's what I want to get to you, though, on the salary cap space. I was watching, when I got home last night, I was watching Inside the NBA after, because the Lakers, of course, were on TNT. And, you know, Barkley's comment directly after Ernie was asking him about the trade was, well, we don't know if it's good yet until they get guys. And I'm sitting there thinking, well, hold on, Chuck, who, by the way, is probably still the best sports analyst going, the most fun, the most entertaining. So this isn't a criticism of Chuck by any means. It's just you can't just look at this trade as, well, if they don't get max guy A this summer, max guy B this summer, or max guy C next summer, it ignores a lot of the different implications of what you can do with that space. So, and that's, you know, that's what I wanted to throw to you, because Pelinka explained this yesterday, but you could probably break it down for us. What can salary cap space actually do for a team, even aside from signing max?
Yeah, so you can either sign with max guys, you can grow the core as it is, you have a lot of guys on rookie deals who are immediate contributors to a team that is, like you said, won 12 of their last 16 games. Lonzo Ball, who obviously has been injured, not been a part of much of this run, is really good. Kyle Kuzma has proven to be a very capable scorer in this league, and Josh Hart is playing out of his mind. Brandon Ingram, taking that next step. That's four guys still on a rookie deal, still on cheap money, mm-hmm. that fit very nicely into a bigger picture of competing pretty soon in a playoff scenario. And then, like you're saying, with that cap space, if it doesn't go to a max free agent, you can still give that money on shorter-term deals to really good players who aren't exactly max players. And that way you have money that will come off your books quickly, but you still get really good talent in the now.
Right, that's exactly. And then a couple other things that occurred to me. So you can also use that space for a trade. And let's say some team, we all know the names that everybody's been discussing as the guys that are, you know, that are free agents, right, that could go somewhere for free. Well, the alternative is something, think back to the Pau Gasol trade, mm-hmm. where nobody knew that that star player was available. Right, he just. But since the Lakers and I remember talking to Jesse Buss about this, of course, the assistant GM and director of scouting, his dad, Dr. Jerry Buss, the greatest owner in pro sports history, at some point initiated a conversation with the Grizzlies owner, and that was at least what I was told as to how that kind of, and then eventually, sure, you know, Mitch Kupchak and Chris Wallace hammer out the details, and they eventually get Powell, but it sometimes starts from who knows, ownership talks to somebody, players talk amongst each other, GM agents come to whatever it might be, and just you don't even realize that a player is available, and all of a sudden you can bring that guy in if you can take on that salary. And,
yep.
and if you look around the NBA right now, take a team like Golden State, for example, obviously Houston, Cleveland. None of these teams can just take on a star player out of the blue and assume them into their space and send something back. So that's another thing you can do with the space where it isn't necessarily just by having a max guy come walk into your building. And then, of course, the last thing you can do in addition to growing the core, you can pay some of your own guys. And in this case, you know, Pelinka mentioned these guys by name. He's Julius Randle. That was a name that everybody was talking about, and what are they going to do with Julius? They didn't do the rookie extension earlier in October, I want to say, was the deadline, and people thought that might have meant he was moving out before the deadline. Well, now, if the Lakers so choose, or if they don't end up either getting the guy they want or they decide to go in a different direction, they can give some of that money to Randall, or they can match a restricted free agency offer, or they can give some of it back to KCP or Brook Lopez or Isaiah Thomas or Channing Frye or any of these guys that are free agents to be. And again, that's what Pelinka mentioned specifically. So this is why it's not this trade, you know, the unloading in some sense of a contract that was going for two more years and not taking any more. All of these options are up, not just we'll see what happens in July.
Yeah. And I think that getting a first round pick back for this trade is kind of an underrated part of it, in the sense that if the Lakers are trying to achieve financial flexibility by you know, getting Jordan Clarkson's contract off the books, then you don't really expect them to get a sweetener back in that deal. So the fact that they were able to get not only open up some cap space, but also get a first rounder back, that's pretty impressive in my eyes.
Yeah, and especially considering how few first round picks were being moved, and
exactly.
how many players, and if you listen to any of the trade experts, whether it's Wojnarowski or somebody that was breaking all this news, he kept saying, well, teams just do not want to part with these first-round picks, even if they're late first-round picks.
Mm-hmm.
And so now, look, not only do the Lakers have this first-round pick, but it's right in that kind of Jesse Buss scouting department sweet spot.
Yep.
You know, Kuzma was 27. Nance was 27. Zubats was 32. Josh Hart was 30. And, of course, this right now actually appears to be even a little bit better than that. Cleveland currently is, I think, 24th, if you look at the Tankathon ranking. So that's or just the standings. So, yes, it's another asset. And as Magic Johnson then said at the end of the press conference, they could also use that in a trade if they wanted to, if they didn't want to take another young player, or they could just add somebody to the core. So, yeah, a lot of these are – that's all good. And then – combine the fact with this team that's so young that isn't getting a ton necessarily from a lot of veteran players, they're winning already.
Yeah.
Right. So it just puts the whole thing into motion, and it's that cause for real optimism, which if you would have gone back again just 1 month, think about how much has changed in 1 month. January 9th, the Lakers had just won their second straight game after losing 9 straight. And all of the stuff that we were talking about, and you know, since then, here are the teams that they've beaten. Okay, so Atlanta, Sacramento, San Antonio, Dallas, Indiana, New York, Boston, Chicago, Brooklyn, Oklahoma City, Phoenix, Oklahoma City. The losses are at Orlando, which was, of course, the worst game of the month, at Toronto, at Oklahoma City, and at Memphis. Now, to push back slightly even on my own argument there, It's also been just about the softest part of the schedule.
That's true.
Okay, that the Lakers just got through. I mentioned the teams. Now, this was after they went through Murderer's Row in playing Golden State, Houston, Cleveland before they started to stink. And now I think Cleveland's going to get better again. But Portland, Minnesota, Philly, Houston again. Like that was the December stretch that was so brutal. And they were in all those games. They just couldn't find a way to win. Then Lonzo went out, right, kind of right in the middle of that stretch. And I shouldn't say the middle of that stretch. Lonzo went out against Dallas in the 13th. And we expect Joey that he's going to be back soon because Luke mentioned in his pregame yesterday that he's progressing. He didn't feel the same kind of pain when they ramped up the activity, blah, blah, blah. And we'll see what Isaiah Thomas and Channing Frye do in terms of adding shooting, which they didn't really have, especially off the bench. So it's all going in a good direction right now, but you still, they're gonna hit a tougher part of the schedule coming up here soon. They can't just keep winning every game in a row, and we'll see the adjustment that needs to be had when Lonzo comes back. You know, what's Isaiah? So there are a lot of question marks that are remaining. But what I want to throw back to you, of all of these young guys that are playing well right now, and you mentioned some of them earlier, Which one have you just been thinking about the most? That you, I know you've been writing different various breakdowns, but you got Ingram, you got Hart, you got Kuzma, you got what guy would you want to focus on just for premises of this discussion?
So I'm gonna cheat out my way out of your question because my article for today is about the four common threads in a 4-game winning streak for the Lakers, and those four common threads have been Julius Randle just taking it to guys in the post. It's been Brandon Ingram, kind of a 2-parter for BI. He's been super efficient on layups in this 4-game stretch. He has been 18 of 22 on layups, which is just ridiculous, even for a guy who is as good at driving and finishing at the cup as B.I. is. The other part of Ingram's section is how good he's been playing as the point forward, 6.5 assists a night since he's shifted into that role. And then Josh Hart cleaning the glass, 11 boards for a guy who's 6'5 and a rookie in this league. Not every rebound has the same value in the sense that, you know, you can get a if it's a free throw and everybody boxes out for you and you just go up, get it, and give it to the point guard, then...
The Westbrook special last year with Adams and Kanter. Although, in fairness to Westbrook, he also goes and gets some just with crazy athleticism.
Yeah. Right. So that kind of rebound doesn't necessarily have the same value as an offensive rebound that saves a possession. And in Hart's case, a defensive rebound where he immediately pushes and catches the defense off guard and it leads to free throws for the Lakers or a bucket or a clean look that just happens to get missed. And he has a lot of those every single game. So the value of Hart's rebounding is even more so than the gaudy numbers that he's putting up. And then fourth is the defense that the Lakers have been playing during this 4-game streak, which is second best in the league in terms of both points allowed and field goal percentage allowed.
So I asked you for one player.
I know, yeah. I told you I was going to cheat out of it.
Try again. Let's try this again.
Okay.
If you had to pick one of these guys, that is at least chance, because I have one in mind for myself, but okay. I want to see who you go to. And I think there isn't a wrong answer here because they're really getting good play from a lot of young guys. Yes. But I want to see which one you're going to take.
Out of all these guys, and right now, Josh Hart is the one that fascinates me the most, and it's because A, in the current NBA, there is a premium on 3-and-D wings. And Josh Hart, in his rookie season, has already basically been a serviceable 3-and-D wing, and he's only going to get better from here.
Yeah.
He competes so hard on defense, and if you look at the tape, he's not afraid to go at Paul George or any of these other wing scorers. Andrew Wiggins, he took it to him. DeMar DeRozan. DeMar had probably the most success out of anyone against Josh, but he still went at him, which is a good thing to see. He had some good possessions on Carmelo, who's obviously a lot bigger than Josh. Like we just went through, his rebounding really just adds so much value to this team. He's been super efficient on his spot-up looks lately, really good relocating, especially with Brandon Ingram, to make it easier for the driving kick for a B.I. or Alonzo or, in theory, an Isaiah Thomas. Mm-hmm. And a sneaky good passer, too. He has a few dimes every game. So I really like the way that Josh has been playing.
All right, so to your point about efficiency, in these four starts, and they've all come in February, 63% from the field, 56% from three, 75% from the free throw line, 3.0 assists, 11.0 rebounds, 13.5 points, 1.3 steals, and 1.5 turnovers. Those are already excellent number. Now, again, four-game sample size. We'll see how that continues. He will likely go back to the bench, you would figure, when Lotto comes back and KCP staying at the two. But, he's really played well. And I think, look, a four-game stretch, even though it's a small sample size, those are four NBA games, okay, against real players, and he's played 30-plus minutes in each one. In fact, he's averaging 35 minutes.
Yeah.
So that to me is it's not an insignificant sample size. Even if it's, you know, the shooting percentages, sure, that might just be a nice hot stretch. But the all-around play for that amount of time to me is telling.
And in this stretch, he's been asked to do something differently than what he's been asked to do before this stretch, which is go get those rebounds and, you know, be a starter. Coming off the bench is so much different than being a starter, especially for a rookie, and especially when you're given a new directive and when you go out and you do it that well. And it's kind of no wonder why, I don't know if you've noticed this too, but both externally and then from the front office and when Rob and Magic were talking yesterday, Josh has been named among the young core. Like, it's when you talk young core, you say, oh, Brandon, yes. Brandon Ingram, Kyle Kuzma, Lonzo Ball, Julius, and of course, Josh Hart. And it's like, okay, well, now he's officially being named into that nucleus, which is it's a great sign for a guy who was 30th overall.
You know, the interesting thing about Hart, though, is some players – so take Julius Randle. He basically plays the same, and he plays the same whether he's off the bench, whether he's starting, similar game, similar aggressiveness. His splits end up being similar. Like, his per 36 numbers aren't that dissimilar. Mm-hmm. Hart is the opposite. When he starts, he's a totally different player from when he comes off the bench. The numbers back it up, and part of that could be because he's just so used to starting and it lets him really feel out the game and get into it and get on the glass. Whereas when he's coming off the bench, sometimes in the NBA, you know, Clarkson, for example, when he was here, and we'll see about Isaiah Thomas, come in and are just right away attacking and aggressive and looking for their shot. If you're not coming in and attacking and looking for your shot and you're spotting up, it's tough to get into that same kind of a rhythm offensively.
Yep.
And then defensively, sure, you can still play the same active defense, but you're not going to have as many opportunities to go to the glass. And it just he hasn't found that way to be to have that similar production off the bench. So what I'm curious to see is so now you think that he's got a chance to be a long time, pretty good starter in this league, but the Lakers have a lot of talent. They may bring in more talent on the wings. How can he find a way to have that same level of impact off the bench as he's had as a starter? And that's something that he's going to have to keep working on in the Lakers coaching staff and so on.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see.
Mike, before we get out of here,
I don't get to get to my guy that I've been
spotlighting. Oh, my bad. No, please do. I thought Stephon Diggs was your guy.
Okay, no.
I thought we talked about him earlier.
Yeah, like you're trying to wrap me up here. Now, in fairness, Joey's trying to protect me because I do need to get to the Lakers plane before it takes off. They do not wait for me.
Just looking out for you.
But which I appreciate very much. But the guy I want to talk about, if at least briefly, is Brandon Ingram.
Yeah.
Now, we've talked about him on this podcast many times and for solid reasons, but I mentioned that stretch of games that Josh Hart had in his last four starts. Well, here, let's just first start with Brandon Ingram's numbers in this stretch. 35 minutes per game, mostly as the point guard. You know, he's done some spotting up here and there. I asked you for a stat during the game last night in what was he doing on catch-and-shoot threes, because he just seems so smooth on those. And I think you told me he has made 8 of his last 10, was it, or 9 of his last 11?
In terms of corner threes, I think it was something like that, 8 of 11 or something.
Okay, yeah, so that part of the game has come around. But the assist-to-turnover ratio, 6.5 assists to 2.0 turnovers, is excellent for a guy that was, you know, a – point guard in high school when he led his team to state titles until he grew, and then they moved him off the ball at least some as he got older at Kinston, and then played basically power forward at Duke, you know,
right,
because of his length, and that team had some injuries in the front court, so he had to switch to that role. He can do so many things that it's just like if you're a coach, what do we do here? Man, Lonzo's going to be out. Well, let's just move Brandon Ingram to point guard. Okay, 4 wins in a row, great assist to turnover ratio, and Joey, the thing that's impressed me the most out of this, though, it's actually somehow helped his efficiency as a scorer.
Yeah.
Usually you would see the opposite. Okay, this guy's got to get us into our offense. He's not going to be able to think about his own offense. Maybe he'll slip some. Well, no. Instead, 19.3 points on 56% from the field, 60% from three. He's even hitting his free throws, 79% from the foul line. He just overall seems to be in a great rhythm. And again, the sample size is smaller, but for the year, if you want to expand the sample size, 16 points, 5.5 rebounds almost, nearly 4 assists. And I compared these to – I just did this on Twitter. It's a kind of a fun exercise. If you look at Paul George or Kawhi Leonard's numbers when they were that age, and granted they had had one – they had had one fewer year of NBA experience because Ingram was younger when he came into the league.
Right.
But as this, I'll wrap this up here to just say that, man, if you have not been watching Ingram closely, you may have bought into that early narrative from last season about how he's skinny and he's not ready and he's not at this caliber play, why he's the number two overall pick. If you're watching him this year, everything makes sense about why everybody was high in him. And even that alone is a very important development for the Lakers to have a guy that really appears to be a potential elite all-star level three, and he can do 3-and-D, he can play point guard, he can spot, like he can do essentially everything. And that's, he's not even really focused on his defense yet because he has to do so much offensively.
Right.
So there's my little Ingram State of the Union as to why you should be excited about him. And don't be shy if you want to be excited about Brandon Ingram. He's able to back it up.
Yeah, I agree with that. Before we get out of here, though, Isaiah Thomas obviously coming into this team changes a few things. What's your immediate reaction to adding IT to what this team already is and what it is without Jordan and Larry?
Well, I will answer your question by first throwing it back at you because you just wrote about Isaiah Thomas.
It's true.
So give me your breakdown, and then I'll weigh in after.
It's kind of ironic because all season long we have been talking about, okay, Lonzo Ball is the engine of this team. He runs this team as efficiently as Luke Walton can ask of a rookie. But at the same time, when Lonzo's off the floor and not in the lineup, it's hard to find playmaking. You know, there was the JC and Alex Caruso combination. There was Tyler Ennis starting for a long stretch of time. And all of a sudden things are clicking with Brandon Ingram at the point. It's kind of ironic that you bring in a point guard at this moment. But that being said, Isaiah Thomas is a really good point guard. And obviously, the hip injury has kind of been the dominant story of his year so far. It kept him out until January. He hasn't seemed as explosive as he was last year when he was just a dynamo, the third highest scorer in the league, and a top five guy when it comes to free throws.
You had I'm looking at your article. You had he led the league in points per game on drives last year.
Yes, and that's the most important thing.
At 9.5, and he shot 66% on driving layups. I'm assuming those numbers are different this year.
Yeah, they've fallen a bit, and the driving hasn't been as bad as some of the other numbers that have fallen, and it's kind of. It's A, he's coming out of Brad Stevens' system, and Brad is a good coach by every measure.
Yep,
and
all tailored to him in his game. Yep,
right?
Yep.
You're playing on LeBron's team, which is, you know, LeBron's going to have the ball in his hands a lot. And,
yes.
and you can say that to an extent about Lonzo, because Lonzo is the point guard, and Magic has said Lonzo's our starting point guard. But Lonzo doesn't dominate the ball. Like,
no, yeah, totally different. Yeah.
Yeah. It's really apples and oranges right there. I think Isaiah does fit a lot better alongside Lonzo. And when the offense bogs down, you have a guy who the one thing that Isaiah has done pretty well this year, and it's been a small sample size, it's been like 20 games, but the one thing that he has done well, despite the hip injury and despite being in a new system and having, you know, that Cleveland team had its issues that we all know about. The one thing that he's done well is just run basic pick and rolls. He's got a really good pull-up jumper still. He's still able to hit the guy on the roll. He's still and I like the bigs that he'll be able to play with here in L.A. I like Julius Randle, who is, we've talked about this before, he's one of the most efficient pick-and-roll big men in the league this year.
As a roller to the rim, obviously.
Right. And then you have two guys, Channing Frye and Brook Lopez, who like to pop out, and as does Kyle Kuzma. So the fact that you have a guy who can – you have a point guard that can put pressure on the rim and three guys that like to pop and one of the most efficient rollers in the game right now – I like that combination. I'm very curious to see how IT does there.
Yes. So I would encourage you to – Joey breaks this all down. It's called Latest Laker, Isaiah Thomas, and there's some video clips in there kind of detailing these various aspects of his game. One thing that I would mention, this is an opportunity for Thomas and for the Lakers to have some positivity out of this year, you know, for both sides, for the Lakers and having him play well and get some wins, for Thomas in taking – you know, changing the narrative away from what it was in Cleveland, where it just was all negative, coming out of the locker room and they were losing, and you know he wasn't playing like the Thomas that we saw last year,
right.
The injury, etc. So that's the first thing. It's a clean slate. You know, it's a chance to start anew with this. The first thing I would say though, because I was asked this on a couple of different radio shows at the Lakers radio partner at ESPN 710. You know, everyone saw the Rachel Nichols' report about the tweet about starting and such. Well, Magic and Pelinka already kind of toned that down a little bit yesterday by saying that they talked to Thomas and he's super excited to come and excited for the new opportunity. And he's going to, you know, I can't see him coming in with this some sort of demand, because that's not, even if he did, Luke Walton is still going to make the decision as to what the role is going to be.
Yeah.
And it just, to me, it doesn't make sense where Lonzo's going to be the starting point guard, even if he's out for a game or two more. We know he's not going to play in Dallas. He's going to be the starting point guard, right? Period. So that leaves the two spot, and Luke Walton has said over and over and over again, how is the team winning this year? Defense. Mm-hmm. Okay, they're playing defense. Whether that's KCP or Josh Hart, that's going to be the – that's what that spot is mostly for. Defense, of course, and three-point shooting, but that's what that spot is for. And so Thomas, to me, can slide almost perfectly into the Clarkson role of being the go-to backcourt scorer, who can also make plays. And in fact, I think there are some numbers that would suggest he can be a little bit better at Clarkson than that, at making plays for other guys in the screen roll, et cetera. He's certainly a better three-point shooter, even though his numbers have been down this year. But for a career, he's a pretty good three-point shooter. And if he's hot and he starts to feel better as the hip gets healthier, then you certainly can ride that out and see if some of that King of the Fourth stuff comes back
right.
from last year. But I just, to me, that it seems like a very easy decision. And again, Luke Walton will do this on his own. He doesn't need anybody else's outside opinion. Mm-hmm. But it seems like a very easy situation for Thomas even to have success in that role. You know, do the things that you do well. Attack on the screen roll. Create shots for teammates. Get that. Get the floor spread for three-point shooting in that unit. And then, you can play with Lonzo. As Lonzo can defend some twos and is longer, and you can do that too. But it fits much more seamlessly in if you're bringing him into that bench kind of feature scorer role, and then see how the game goes. And Luke likes to ride the hot hand.
Yeah. And the thing with IT is that he's on the last year of his contract. There are 28 games left in this season, 2 months, not including the All-Star break, so
that's
more like 7 weeks.
28 games.
So you know, if all goes swimmingly, then like you've said, you can re-sign Channing Frye. You can re-sign Isaiah Thomas, among other guys that are up at the end of the season. But if not, it's a very low-risk move. You to get a guy who was second-team All-NBA last year, and you can see how he's recovered from this injury, how he looks in the system. And if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. If it does, then you have the inside track on to re-signing the guy.
Right. And look, regardless of whether, even like re-signing him specifically, that's not even something that they have to worry about right now. So for whether it's Thomas or Randall or Lopez or KCP, whether it's free agents from other team, whether it's a trade, that's all stuff that Pelinka and Magic can work out. What Luke Walton is going to focus on, what the players have to focus on, is how to keep this positive style of play, this energetic defensive mindset, and now add a couple of extra tools and pieces to it. And that's the stuff that they have to focus on. Now, Julius Randle is a good example, though, for this. If you play really well, and that's all you worry about, don't worry about the outside discussion and trades and this and that, just play well on the court, that's how you can help yourself in your career. That goes for Randle, that goes for Thomas, that goes for the rookies, that goes for everybody in the NBA. So if that's the thing that they're all focused on, and I think Luke is pretty good at getting players to buy into that, then that's going to help everybody in the end. And ideally, that's what they'll see.
And I'm very curious as to how if Luke can keep the guys playing at a high defensive level, because IT by all sources he competes defensively, but he's also the shortest player in the league. And there's nothing he can do about that. So if Luke can find a way to keep the defense, especially that second unit defense, operating at a high level, then I think that's the biggest challenge of Luke's season.
Well, look, I'll just say this about Thomas's defense, and you're right. It's just by any metric, it's not helping teams. But Clarkson wasn't the league's best defender either, and that didn't to me where they're gonna struggle some. And although it didn't happen against Oklahoma City, acknowledged that they were without their two of their three best offensive players, but still, the Larry Nance is the guy that they're gonna miss more defensively. And so Thomas, to me, again, if he's basically sliding into that Clarkson role, that they're somewhat similar on that end. You could say Clarkson can make a little more plays. Maybe he'd slide in for a steal or a weak side block here and there. He was obviously healthier and more explosive. But, the player that really organized things defensively was Larry Nance Jr., and then also had the athleticism to impact. So it's Julius Randle is going to have to continue to play better defense. They're going to need Brook Lopez maybe to play more and play better defense. They're going to need Channing Frye when and if he plays to ramp up on that end. So that's that second unit defense is could be somewhat of a I don't want to say concern, but that's where they're going to miss some stuff. But look, even I want to say two. Last time I looked, defensive efficiency was like 3 days ago, and the Lakers were 11th. They're now tied for 8th after these last couple of games, in which they've they held the. What did the Thunder end up scoring? Was the final one? I want
81.
To say it was 81. Yeah, yep. So 80. The Thunder had 81. Phoenix got 93. The win at Oklahoma City. Thunder scored 104, and then Brooklyn scored 99. So three out of the last four opponents under 100 points, and the margin of victory. Here has been impressive. So obviously it was close for the first two. At Brooklyn they won by 3. At OKC they won by 4. Then they beat Phoenix by 21, and Oklahoma City last night by 20. Was it 24? 25. Was the final score? Oh, 106-81. Yeah. So 25. So look, they the defense has ramped up, and meanwhile, if they can get the offense, here's where I think that maybe you could balance some of that out, because Thomas and Fry,
that's a fair point,
definitely should be able to impact the offense in terms of spacing, three-point shooting. The Lakers still, even though they've moved up, they were 29th last week, they are now 27th in offense and starting to climb. I think Memphis is 26th, Brooklyn is 25th. I think they'll pass those two teams. I think the Knicks are going to fall. They're 23rd. Porzingis just went out. They're going to fall. You know, Atlanta is right there. Miami is right there. So the Lakers, I think, will rise on offense. And if they can stay close to where they are defensively, and I think they can, then look, they're going to be in pretty good shape. The wins are going to keep piling up, and things are going to continue to look pretty bright.
All right, Mike, we got to make sure you have to get to Dallas on time.
Yep.
So.
I'm going to go get on the plane. Joey, pleasure as always. We will talk soon.
Sounds good.
All right. See you guys.
Oh, did he put Person in the popcorn machine?
Yeah, Person ran at him out of control. And-